A lot of hubbub going on the App Store, Apple, and the Mac scene. My name's Tim Robertson, and you're listening to My Mac Podcast number 195.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
My name is Tim Robertson. I'm the publisher of MyMac.com, MyMac Magazine, joined today with David Cohen. Hello, David Cohen.
Evening, all.
And we've also got return engagement, Bill Dudney. And I still can't say your name right in my head. I don't know why, Bill.
Yeah. I get email or mail addressed to Dudney and Dubney and everything else you can possibly imagine. So no worries.
I think you know what it is for me. When I see your name, I think of the Harry Potter characters. What's the Dursleys?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that name just kind of pops up there. Maybe it's because I'm rereading the entire series right now. Yeah. I don't know. That could
it's
be
a far sight better than in high school when Dudley Do-Right was a popular character. So
I can imagine that wasn't fun at all.
I got that quite a bit.
So a lot of iPhone applications being released right now. Not so many Mac applications. I think that's going to level out here in the next couple months. Right now everybody seems to be jumping on the iPhone bandwagon, including Bill. He had some of the, two applications at the iPhone store launch. Any new stuff coming out from you?
Yeah,
right now?
I have one app that's pretty close. Should be the next, a lot of it's going to depend on testing and stuff, but should be the next week or so, another little simple game. And then have a couple of bigger things in the works that are going to be take longer to get into that are more, but they're more specialty apps, niche apps.
Well, we appreciate you coming back on the show again. And, you know, I think it's going to be important for us going forward to have more iPhone developers because obviously we're a Mac show, but I kind of look at the iPhone and the apps there as just an extension of the Mac platform. So we're just going to talk about that as well. I think more and more people that listen to this show are going to be migrating to either the Touch or the iPhone or whatever. I mean, there's rumors now coming out that the next, not the Nano, but the, what's the other one? Is it the Nano?
Well, yeah. There's so many rumors about so many things. I've read rumors about an iPhone Nano. I've also read rumors about a redesigned iPod Touch. So my wish list for that is GPS and camera, but we'll see.
Well, I think they definitely need to put a camera in the Touch. But if they do that, I really hope that they use a better camera than the one that's in the iPhone, which, quite honestly, is kind of crappy. Don't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's great for casual shots, you know, where you just want to take a quick picture and you don't really care what the quality is. But
all right, you're at the zoo with your kids and they're doing something funny, you whip out your iPhone and take that picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's really not very good for some of the more sophisticated usages. I at the iPhone Dev Camp last weekend, I met the developer behind I've forgotten the name of the application, but it's essentially you type in a UPC number off of a product and it'll look it up on the internet and tell you all the reviews and whatever. It hits five or six different web services, including Amazon or whatever. It gives you price comparison and all that kind of stuff. But he wants to integrate into the camera. He wants to be able to take a picture of the barcode. Well, to get that picture, he's got to write a thesis on teaching people where to put their camera.
Because it's just not good enough.
Exactly, the focus link.
Whereas, like the EyeSight camera in the Macs and the external EyeSight cameras that Apple used to sell, but for some reason don't anymore, which I still don't understand. With Delicious Library, you can do that. You just hold it up to the camera; it sees it, it checks it, it knows exactly what it fills all the metadata in. Why isn't the camera in the iPhone good enough?
Well, here's the thing: the problem is you know, with digital photography, there's two things that need to be right for a camera to be really good. You need to have a good lens and you need to have a good chip, a CCD chip. And the problem with the iPhone is it has a pretty bad lens because it's very small. And then obviously it's got a tiny pinhole CCD chip in there. And the difficulty is it's fine in the conditions it was designed for. If there's good light and, you know, you hold your camera you hold the iPhone fairly still, you can normally get a decent picture out of it. But
I don't want to say it's terrible, because I've used the iPhone quite a bit, the camera and the iPhone, and honestly, I've got some really great pictures from it, surprisingly.
Although, if you look at the my latest Fenestration article, that picture of the MSI Win that I took on there, I took with the iPhone. And,
that's a good picture, too.
I don't think, looking at it, anybody would actually think it was taking the iPhone, and it came out that well. But the problem.
Well, Photoshop helps too. I mean,
I didn't.
Almost every photo that I take with the iPhone, I run through Photoshop.
Yeah, I didn't actually process that picture at all. I sent it straight out to Flickr, it was fine. But you're right. You can do it a bit of extra work. But I think the problem is unless they put a big, you know, sort of 2-inch lens, like some of the bigger camera phones in there with a glass lens in it, and then at least a 3 or 4 megapixel CCD in, then they're never going to get anything that's going to come even close to what you can get from a $100 handy cam or something like that. So it's going to be a case of what people want out of it. I don't see Apple doing something like that, because I think it would be too much. It would compromise the design too much.
Yeah, and Apple's all about design, as we well know.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, I think this is kind of strange. Company releases an application up on iTunes. It goes on sale. People start to buy it, and then Apple pulls it. And then it comes back, and then it goes away again. Application is called NetShare. I don't understand. The company is Null River. I've actually bought a few of their products. They make really good products. I bought 2 applications from them in the past, one that shares my iTunes library with my Xbox, and another one that shares my iTunes library with my PS3. I was going to buy this because, in essence, this lets your laptop computer use your network over the telephone, over your iPhone, to browse the internet.
Yeah.
Why did this application just disappear? Anybody have any? We obviously don't have any inside information, but we'll start with you, Bill. What do you think about that? Do you think that Apple has a responsibility to the developer to communicate better?
Oh, my God.
Or do you think it's their backyard, they can do whatever they want?
Oh, they absolutely need to communicate better. But the problem is that it's kind of like the Mobile Me thing, is they were expecting 14 people to show up to the party and 14,000 showed up.
Yeah.
And so the people who are handling those applications are buried under a pile, and they're digging their way out as fast as they can, and there's just no time to actually interact. I actually had an update to Dot Game. I uploaded it a week ago, Thursday afternoon a week ago. On Friday, I heard back that there was some problem, whatever, the silly thing with the way I did the upload. I didn't hear back again until last night around 11:30, and they forgot to switch it to say you can upload a new version. I didn't hear back from them until 11:30 last night saying, hey, if you want to upload a new binary, you can. So,
wow, it took that long.
Yeah, and it was simply they just forgot to flip a switch in the web app that controls that stuff. So they're totally swamped. On the Null River thing in particular, there is speculation among some of the developers that I talked to that what's going on with that is there's a potential that violates the AT&T contract. And if you were to use that application, AT&T wants you to pay for some other data plan, Enterprise or some yada yada.
But is that Apple's responsibility? And AT&T is not the only cell phone carrier that has the iPhone.
Right, but I suspect what the deal is that there's some sort of, and it's not AT&T and it's not Apple proper, it is somebody is saying, hey, I'm not sure that that's okay. And so the only safe thing that they can do is to pull it until someone tells them that it's okay. And then so then it goes to legal or whoever, the grand poobah, or it sits on Steve Jobs' desk while he contemplates it or whatever. And then it just gets lost in Never Never Land. I have heard that Null River is talking. They are getting feedback from Apple, and they're trying to work through whatever it is that the problem is.
Hello, Guy Searle.
Hey!
I didn't say anything when I brought you into the Skype chat, but you're with us now. So
no, it's okay.
Guy Searle from Virginia, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I realize that you hate me, so it works out.
That's okay. I've always hated you, but we still get you on the show.
Yeah, well, quality content is quality content.
You know, I have to wonder, because if you're going to sell something in the App Store, and Apple releases it on the App Store for you, doesn't that constitute some kind of a legal binding agreement that you're going to have, what's the terminology I'm looking for? That Apple's going to play fair with this content. That they're not just simply going to pull it willy-nilly. Because it's not like it's free software. This is a company releasing software, selling software, and then Apple is interfering with their right to do business.
Yeah, but it's Apple's platform, and they're allowing everyone into the platform on their terms. So, yeah. You know, the way this will typically work from the sort of contracts that I've negotiated with suppliers in the past is in this particular instance, the supplier will have, who in this case is AT&T, supplied the network, will have negotiated a clause in the contract that has said, we reserve the right, if we believe there's an application that either compromises our network or our business model, that we can, highlight that, we can escalate that to Apple, and Apple will have to immediately act to remove the application until we can sit down and discuss it and come to a decision. And I think that's what's happened here. Now, in the same token, same way, there's an agreement between developers and Apple regarding access to the iPhone platform, and I don't know whether you can confirm this, Bill, but I'm sure the legalese in there so basically says, well, we've got the final say on anything we want to do.
Yeah, it's not quite as bad as I'm going to have to wash Steve Jobs' car every week, but
it's their backyard. If we want to play in their backyard.
It's tilted in Apple's favor, though, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. And, honestly, I kind of would prefer that it is that way, because I don't want there to be I want it to be a safe place for people who own a phone to go buy applications so that they don't have to rely on word of mouth or whatever. So when I push a new app, I know that people are going to feel safe in downloading it, that it's not going to reformat their hard drive or whatever, right? It's going to do something reasonable, close to what I said it was going to do.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Apple's vetting process needs to be improved? Do you think that's where the real problem lies? Like you were saying, they're probably avalanched in applications trying to get them approved and tested and all that. You think it's simply that Apple really needs to refine that process of vetting software that's going up to the Apple Store?
Possibly. And it might not even be necessarily changing the process as it is putting more people in place to get it done quicker. I don't know. Mm. I have no insight into what they're really doing and how much time it takes and how many people they have on it. But it does take too long, and you don't get very much meaningful feedback until, 3 or 4 days later you get an email saying, hey, it's hosed. Then 3 or 4 days later, you can do something about it, and then 3 or 4 days later, they check it again. That's not a very good, as a developer, my debug cycle is 2 or 3 seconds. I make a change, I click the go button, and I look at it, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. A 3-day turnaround is not very good.
Well, plus the existing bugs stay on there for all your customers until you're able to push it up.
So frustrating, because I'll get an email from someone and they'll say, hey, this thing or whatever didn't work like I expected it to. I fix it in 5 seconds and it takes a week
before they get it.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, I've made 3 or 4 other fixes, but I uploaded a patch, so I can't upload another one until Apple runs it through the thing. So.
But here's the thing, though. The thing is that, obviously Apple has historically been very, very controlling of their marketing and what the messaging is for everything they do. And via doing that, they've been able to really present an idea of a very smooth, very seamless, very slick experience.
Usually.
And now we've got two instances. We've got this and also the situation with Mobile Me, where they've not been able to do that. And in fact, they're getting quite a lot of bad publicity, and things are looking pretty messy for them. And I'm quite confident that the senior management at Apple, particularly Steve Jobs himself, are reading all this publicity and are knocking heads around inside that organization.
Steve Jobs has come out publicly just recently saying that MobileMe is not living up to and hasn't lived up to Apple's expectations on reliability, stability, and all that. He's not happy with it.
No, but it's going to take time. You know, you don't. I think what they're learning is you don't scale overnight. I mean, you know, we've talked in the past about things like Twitter and how poor that can be sometimes in terms of it goes up and down so much. And that's something they've learned as well, is you can't scale stuff just by throwing computers or resources or anything like that at it. You've got to get your business processes right and get them well organized and streamlined, and then it's easy to scale up by adding more people or adding more technology in. And that's something that Apple are learning. And you know, I'm sure as time goes on, they will be a lot better at this. But at the moment, people unfortunately having to suffer while they figure it all out.
Well, Bill, let me tell you something that I came up with a couple shows back. Oh, it's been more than a couple, but an app store for the Macintosh. It would be an application something like iTunes, but it would be for Mac software. One place that you can go to buy Mac software regardless of the publisher themselves. Is that something as a developer you would be interested in or no?
Oh, it's such a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it would be great because you would have a central place for everybody to come check stuff out. On the flip side, it drives me nuts that it's a week between each bug fix. I really am not interested in having to do that because I don't have anything that's shipping yet, but I have an application for the Mac under development. And when it is done, I do not want to have to wait a week for a bug fix. I want to be able to get the thing fixed and get it out to people in 5 minutes or less. On the one hand, it's great because it gives everybody a central place to go. But the flip side is, as a developer, it could be really, really frustrating.
The problem right now, as far as being on the flip side of that argument, as somebody that wants to buy and find software, it's so difficult nowadays to find stuff. Unless you can find the developer's website, or unless Google actually finds your company and your product when I do a Google search, you're not going to get my money. Whereas if it's in one central location, like, you know, an iTunes type of store, where there's no preference given to an EA game over a .dot game, you know, it's a more level playing field, and it's one central area that anybody can go to find what they're looking for.
Yes, and that is the major upside of it, is that there would be one place where we could go, where we could go to put stuff, and where people could go to look for things.
Yeah, not saying that this would be the only place you can get your software, but it would be probably a huge resource for you, because you're going to reach clients that you never would have in the first place.
Absolutely. And it would be like Version Tracker is a resource for doing that kind of stuff. If we had an app store type thing for the Mac, that would be another avenue where, you know.
Well, but my idea was not just, it would be an actual store. You can buy it from there as well.
Absolutely. And let's give Apple, or I personally as a developer would be more than happy to give Apple a 30% take if they handled all the credit card and all the whatever. You know, that would be phenomenal.
Yep. Okay, the next thing that we want to talk about is, and Bill can only speak to this a little bit because he's still under that, it's the NDA still hovering over the app developers. What the heck's going on, Guy Searle? Why is Apple having this NDA still in place this long into the product cycle?
Honestly, I have no idea. Yeah, and you know, this came up in a conversation I had with someone earlier today, just talking about those kinds of things in general, is that, you know, is there anything that's really stopping the various iPhone developers from comparing notes other than the NDA? And if they just don't tell Apple about it, then, you know.
Well, it's not just talking to each other, though. It's, and Bill's going to be more knowledgeable on this, but if I was a developer and I was struggling at writing a piece of code, it would be much easier for me as a developer to jump onto Google, do a quick search, and find exactly the code that I'm looking for that another developer had the same problem and posted the solution up on his own web blog. Right now, he can't do that. So really, it's hurting the developers that they can't share information, and it's hurting us as the buyer of these applications that we're not getting the best applications because the developers are trying to figure stuff. They're hamstrung. So I don't think it helps anybody, and it's definitely not helping Apple.
Well, there must be a reason for it. They wouldn't just hold out on the NDA just, you would imagine, just because they haven't got around to it. The only thing that I've sort of heard that might possibly explain it is that maybe there are some, there is some legal reason that there may be some patent application that needs to go through, that they don't want to be blown by, you know, things in the NDA, or there may be something else that's proprietary or maybe linked to this upcoming product in September that they alluded to at their last call, that maybe if the NDA wasn't there and people could discuss the SDK in more open terms, perhaps it might give information about that away, and they don't want to do that at this point. There's a commercial reason for doing it. So it's frustrating. And, you know, I mean, Bill and I were just talking just before we came, where we started recording, that, you know, I sort of said, well, how easy is it to get into iPhone programming if you know a bit of programming, but you've never programmed for that platform before? And, you know, Bill, you were saying that the learning curve's quite steep. And of course, you know, one of the things that contributes to that is the fact that I wouldn't be able to talk to you or to anybody else about,
exactly,
you know, yeah, whatever problems the, you know, that came up for you.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
It's so
killing me. I have 2 books, a training class, and 5 hours worth of video training on the net, all of which is sitting in a big pile of I'm done but can't do anything with it. It's exceedingly frustrating as a developer.
Okay, well, now, right now, there was an announcement, I guess, today, that Rob Schoben, who was Apple's vice president of applications marketing, has been replaced by, Eddie Q, who's going to lead all the internet services. I guess he was doing just iTunes before. Do you think that this management shakeup will make any difference, or do you think Apple is still going to hold it close to their chest?
You know, it's hard to tell. I think the biggest part of that was he got the axe because of the mobile me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because a lot of people are saying Apple wasn't ready for this much traffic. Well, that's BS. iTunes gets more traffic than mobile me will ever get.
Oh, absolutely.
So Apple absolutely knows about heavy traffic. Their trailers page on the internet, apple.com/movie trailers or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of the most hit web pages on the planet. So you can't tell me Apple doesn't know how to scale up when it comes to heavy traffic. The problem was the guy that was in charge of mobile me, obviously, he put together, I'm going to assume, a pretty competent team, but they did a lot of things wrong. So what Apple did is they put it in the breadbasket of the guy who knows how to do it, and that's the guy that was in charge of iTunes.
Yeah.
At least that's how it reads to me. This guy really screwed up, and They're going to give it to someone that's more competent. Anybody disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. But do you believe that Apple should have scaled this out? That, like, released Mobile Me, say, first as a replacement for .Mac, and then, you know, work up to the iPhone and to the App Store instead of trying to do it all at one time? Do you think that's where the problem laid?
Well, Steve Jobs said that's where the problem laid, and you know, I mean, he's running the company, so if he says.
Well,
if he says they shouldn't have done it like that, then I would probably be inclined to agree with him. I mean, because sounds to me like a pretty good explanation.
I suspect Steve Jobs was the one beating the guy on the head with a brick, saying, "If you don't make this so that it all goes out on the same day, you're fired."
And he did, and it didn't work out, and he's fired anyway.
Exactly.
That's what you get working for Apple and Mr. Jobs.
Actually, there's a law, and this wasn't in our show notes. I don't know how many people other than me saw this, but there's actually a lawsuit right now that some ex and current Apple employees are suing Apple over the fact that they're not getting compensated correctly. They're ostensibly called management, even though they're not. They do hourly wage type of work. So Apple doesn't have to pay them overtime. They don't have to reimburse them for lunch. I didn't know in California your company has to pay for your lunch. That's crazy.
I don't think it's lunch. I think it's dinner. You have to work more than X hours a day, then they have to pay for a meal.
I'm moving to California because I get hungry.
Yeah. The thing is, this looks, you know, I read this story, and, you know, most of the guys who are on this lawsuit are ex-Apple employees.
That's going to make you stop and think a little bit.
And, you know.
Although, I will say, there was something very similar to that happen at, I think it was EA. It was one of the major game developers that they basically got sued for the same reasons, that they were insisting their employees were working like 70 hours a week towards the end of these gaming cycles, and they weren't getting compensated for it. And they won.
I'll bet it's probably trial lawyers on a feeding frenzy after that EA thing. They're looking for, you know, any disgruntled employee to start a class action with.
I think you're disparaging lawyers there. Never mind.
No, we would never do that.
Oh, no.
Because let's face it, nobody puts a gun to these guys' heads and says, you must work there. I mean, you know, if you have a good company on your resume and you want to move to a competitor or to a startup, you know, I mean, that happens all the time in the Valley. So.
You can't tell me having an Apple computer on your resume doesn't help.
Exactly.
Getting a tech job. So,
I hate it.
Unless you started MobileMe.
Yeah.
I was in charge of MobileMe. We'll get right back to you.
You know whose resume I would like to have, and that's our writer Owen Rubin, because he worked at Apple and he worked at Atari at the height of both of those companies. Although, technically, this is the height of Apple Computer, but prior to this, he worked at the time at Apple Computer that everybody would want to work at Apple Computer.
Yeah, the other height.
The other height. And same thing with Atari. He was there at the height of Atari, when Atari was the company. So he's got those two on his resume. That would be kind of nice to have those two on your resume, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's cool.
So the other thing is the reports now that someone says that Apple has phoning technology built into the iTunes, and that it reports what's on your iPhone, and that Apple can literally remotely delete an application on your iPhone. So if you downloaded this program we were talking about earlier, NetShare, Apple could theoretically delete it off your iPhone.
Yeah, I think what that is a web service that allows Apple to turn off applications that are acting inappropriately. So you could imagine, like, I don't know if you guys followed the stink that happened with Aurora Faint, where it was uploading a bunch of information that people could potentially not want it to. Apple could have, but didn't, could have put that application on the blacklist, and then the iPhone would have disallowed that application from starting.
I think it is
the intent there is not to, you know, delete applications that you've spent money on. It's to protect your phone or your sensitive data that's on your phone.
Or the network itself
from malicious applications that might make it out of the vetting process by acting nice if it's in an Apple network, and then once it gets on a phone, it acts like a psycho.
Well, so you're not joining the conspiracy theorists out there saying that this is Apple's plan to take over the world or anything like that, I take it?
No.
I don't either. I think honestly, I would be surprised if Apple didn't have that kind of technology built in, because who knows what can get through the vetting process, especially when we start passing. Well, we've already passed 1,000 applications available up on the App Store. When we have 10,000 applications up there, heaven forbid you get one that's really, you know, it gets through the vetting process, but, you know, after, I don't know, 3 weeks, it turns into some kind of malware or virus or something.
But who's doing the vetting? Apple's doing.
Well, Apple is. Well, but you got to remember, as much as we would like to presume that everyone at Apple knows what they're doing, they don't make any mistakes, that's just not the case. It's a company run by people, so there's going to be mistakes. That's going to happen, and I'm kind of, as an iPhone user, kind of glad that Apple does have this technology that they can turn something off of my iPhone if that's going to cause a serious problem.
The problem with this report is it comes on top of this other stuff we've been talking about. I mean, the report I saw on that said that one guy actually had NetShare installed and Apple remotely deleted it off his iPhone. Now,
until I actually got proof of that, I would call that BS.
Yeah, but the point is that, you know, the reason they're getting beat up, I think ordinarily if you know they hadn't had some of these other problems, probably when somebody had announced this, everyone would have gone, yeah, okay, fairly interesting, and then it would have moved on. But people are focusing on it because there's all this negative publicity. And I think, you know, much as they did with MobileMe, Apple does need to probably act to respond in some way, because I think people are starting to get a bit frustrated now that, you know, in terms of things with the App Store, there are things they're not happy with, and Apple is being very quiet about it.
But do you think this is why they removed the I Am Rich app?
I loved that application.
I thought that was great.
You know, I
thought that was brilliant.
It's just beautiful irony, right? The guy that wrote it had a $5 calculator application, and more than half of his reviews were essentially, this is stupid, it should be free. I think he was making a point.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
I think as well, much as we've seen with, you know, some of the stuff in the Mac community like Mac Heist, which have been fairly controversial, but they've generated quite a lot of column inches in the blogs. I think this was a perfect example of clever marketing. And let's face it, you know, with 1,000 apps on the App Store, if you want to get your name talked about, then you've got to do stuff like this. And I suspect we'll see more, you know, clever ideas to try and raise the profile of developers and their applications in the future.
But here's the question. Regardless if this was kind of a joke application or not, which it pretty much was, it was an application that cost $999, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it essentially did nothing.
It was a little shiny ruby.
Yeah, and it had some kind of a saying if you went over to the back of it or something. I didn't spend $1,000 to find out. And I doubt if anybody did. But you never know, maybe one or two people that have a whole lot of money bought it just to say, see, I've got an application that costs $1,000 on my iPhone.
Yeah.
I could have bought 2.5 iPhones. But why do you think Apple would take it down? I mean, they obviously approved it. They obviously knew how much it cost. And I would assume their vetting process meant that at least one person at Apple would have launched the application just to see what the dang thing does. So why take it down? They approved it.
Well, do you think there's a possibility that you know, whoever was vetting it didn't even look at what the price was going to be? I mean, chances are the people that are actually checking out these apps, they, you know, they're not going to look at the price because they don't care. That's not part of their job. Their job is to check the app to make sure that it works the way it's supposed to.
But at that point, Guy, it's not malicious software. It didn't do anything bad to your iPhone. This person obviously wrote the application, put the price. Now, we know he wasn't real serious about the application, but it was approved. Don't you think you'd have some kind of a legal argument that Apple doesn't have a right to remove that application after it's been approved?
No.
Simply because of PR reasons?
No.
Because that's why
they took it down.
Absolutely.
But again, it goes back to what we were saying before. It's their platform. They can do what they want. The reason they took it down is because, let's face it, if somebody had gone, you know, there aren't really any controls on the App Store about, you know, if you think about the actual buying process, it's fairly easy just to click on something and boom, you've bought it. And, you know, it goes to that application. That's $1,000 off your iTunes account or on your credit card. And, you know, I'm sure people, once they realize it obviously it went through their automated or semi-automated process and got put on the store. And once they realized actually what it was and how expensive it was, they must have thought to themselves, you know, look, this is a lawsuit waiting to happen because all we're going to do is get some kid, go and pick up his you know, his mom's
iPhone. His parents' iPhone.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And find it in the App Store and install it. And then we've got to sort all of that out. And they decided it wasn't worth the effort. So, you know, again,
I think the problem there goes back to the vetting process. It never should have been approved. It never should have been up in the Apple Store. And, you know, I don't know. When Apple starts saying what can be up there, what can't be, trying to pat me on the head and tell me what's best for me, I kind of got a little bit of a problem with that, but by the same token, I want to make sure that everything I'm buying up there
is going to be good.
Is going to be good, and it's not going to hurt my phone. I mean, it's a delicate balancing act.
You love it when,
you know,
Steve,
we talked about it. We talked about it when the App Store first launched, that how many flashlight applications are up there. I think, were we talking with you about that, Bill?
We sure were, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, that's literally the first application you can make. It's built in to the developer kit. It's super simple to do, and people are charging 99 cents, $1.99 for it, and it's a joke. But yet, who are we to say that Apple shouldn't allow that up there? So, I don't know. It's a balancing act. I'm not quite sure where I come down on that. I want the greatest amount of choice on my iPhone and the App Store, but yet, by the same token, I don't want, you know, a bunch of crap up there, because the more crap that's up there, it devalues everything else that's there. Do you agree with that, Bill?
Partially, because what'll happen is, just like the music store, if we had, you know, if you think about it, if we have indie music stores and my 13-year-old could go grab his guitar and smash it on the ground and record it and upload that to iTunes.
He can.
He can, and that would be on the store, but how many sales is he going to get, and who's even going to find it, right? And that's what's going to happen with the App Store.
Yeah.
Even now with Dot Game, when it first came out, it was up at the top of the paid apps. It was in the top 50. It was getting a lot of hits and everything. And then as that initial buzz has died down, it's moved off of the top 50 list, and it doesn't get nearly as many downloads. It's now really hard to find.
Do you think that Apple needs to do a little bit better of a job as far as organization in the App Store? Because quite honestly, right now, I want to check out a new game. I go to games. There's 500 games. I got to sit there and scroll and scroll and scroll to find. Now, it's easier if I'm using iTunes, but I'm talking about the actual App Store on the iPhone itself. It's a pain in the butt to find anything.
It is. I don't know what the answer is, but they have people there with very big brains, and they know how to make it fit with the iTunes foo. I don't know what the right thing to do is, but they need to come up with a better way. And
I tell you what drives me crazy now, if I'm looking at one application, then I go back. It takes me back to the top of the list again, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, which is a pain.
You know, I was halfway through these 400 listings, and I got to scroll, 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 scroll. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is really frustrating. And as a developer, there needs to be a way, an easier way, for me to get noticed. You know, like, you look at Dizzy Bee. That is a cool game, but it has been on the front page of iTunes since July 11th.
Do you think, though, that in full disclosure here, I'm launching a new website in partnering with Sam Levin called App Minute, appminute.com, appinminute.com. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to be about the App Store stuff. It's going to be news and information about the App Store. Do you think a site like that could fill that kind of a void where a developer like you, and I'm not trying to sell you here, Bob, but a developer like you who wants to get more attention, and Apple isn't going to give you that attention. And I'm in the same boat when it comes to this podcast. We're never featured. You know, the Leo Laporte stuff is featured
all the time.
If he farts in the microphone and calls it Fart Weekly, Apple will have that featured because it's Leo Laporte, and he knows people at Apple, and they're all great buddies. But yet our podcast, who's one of the longest-running Mac podcasts on this planet, we never get featured.
You can call it...
Never.
You can call it TWIF.
TWIF, exactly. And so we never get featured. So I understand what you're saying, Bill, but by the same token, it's really not up to Apple to do your marketing for you. So do you think that a site like App Minute or any other app-specific website could help fill that void for promotional? Now, obviously, it's going to cost you money, but as a developer, you got to have some kind of money set aside for, you know, marketing so people will find your stuff. Do you think that's going to be the answer for developers, a site like that where you can get a little bit more exposure that you're not getting from Apple?
Absolutely. I think that will certainly help. And I guess really it's not so much that I want Apple to put Dot Game.
You know, yes, you do.
I would love it.
Yes, you do.
I would absolutely love that. But I understand, right? If they put Dot Game, they need to put Flashlight. So I don't want there to be, you know, I don't want everybody to get 5 minutes of glory on the front page. But there needs to be a way where people can find
games. Needs to be a little bit more fair.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe fair is the wrong word, but there needs to be a way so people could find it more quickly or easier without having to scroll through the 500. You know?
Right. I agree. I'm, you know, if I was so smart, I would have the answer, and I'd probably work at Apple.
Well, is
actually, no, I wouldn't.
In the App Store, is there a search for most downloaded?
Yes, absolutely. And there's a top 25, and there's the recently added and stuff like that. But even then, it's still very confining. And I'm thinking that it's probably not the App Store itself is a problem. It's how you can search for stuff on the iPhone itself. It's such a small screen. Your pointing device is your finger. So, I don't know. If I was so smart, like I said, I'd probably work at Apple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a ton of work. I mean, the internet is sort of the same thing, right? It's virtually impossible to find what you're looking for. And then up came Google. And, you know, one of the things that's happening is that there's a list of keywords or whatever you can attach to a blog entry. You can attach a bunch of tags. And then those tags become more important search terms than just the general text. But all of these things have gaming capability where people game the game the system. Like, I don't know if you guys noticed in the first few days, there were a couple of developers that were naming their applications dollar sign or space or whatever.
AAAA.
AAA.game, right, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, but Apple took care of that.
They did.
I give them credit for that.
Yep. And then so the next gaming thing is to make your application free for a week so it gets tons of downloads and then start charging 99 cents and it shows up on the top of the list. You know,
right.
So then Apple's going to do something to fix that. And so all of this stuff has gaming capabilities. I think it just, there needs to be an easier way. There needs to be a better way for people to search the App Store.
Yep. I agree. And anybody's wondering about App Minute. This is the, I did post something up at MyMac.com. It's just a picture of our logo and it says coming soon from the creator of MyMac magazine. It'll probably launch within a week. So by the time you hear this, probably a couple more days and it should be live. We're still working with our web developer to get everything in order, but the site's actually there. If you go to appminute.com, it's just our logo and it says coming soon, but we've got a whole lot of stuff going on the back end and hopefully that will launch soon. And once that launches, we'll probably have a podcast occasionally on there as well, talking about app stuff. Well, we need to take a quick break. We need to come back and talk about our sponsor and bring in Sam Levin for Cool Mac Picks. I know you got a run, Bill. We really want to thank you for being on the show this week. Thanks a lot, man.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks.
And Bill has agreed to come back on occasionally as a occasional co-host, kind of like Lee Gibbon. So you'll hear from Bill again real soon. We'll be right back. All right, we're back here on the MyMac podcast. We're joined with joined by Sam Levin. Hello, Sam Levin.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We're going to get to the Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin in just a minute, but first we want to thank our sponsor, Otherworld Computing, at MacSales.com. And David Cohen, you found a pretty cool product from Otherworld Computing this week to chat about.
I did. This is the Marshall MXL006 USB condenser microphone. Now, something like this is great. Not, you know, if you want to do podcasting, something like this is fantastic. But even if you want to do more general recording, you want to do anything at home or in a business setting, if you want to record a meeting or a focus group or anything like this, this is exactly what you need. What it is, it's a large USB condenser mic, and condenser mics are great because they're really, really sensitive.
That's what I'm using right now, is a condenser microphone.
Yeah.
And it's got a wide pattern, too.
Exactly. That's
Sorry. The Lions just scored a touchdown.
Otherworld Computing, you'll just have to excuse Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Detroit Lions season. Are playing preseason football on the TV, and I've got the HD version running in the background, so I'm like constantly turning around and looking and then coming back to the show.
It should be for an interesting show.
That's right.
Yeah.
Play-by-play days after the game's already happened.
So nobody check with ESPN.
That's right. So it's a USB condenser mic with a large diaphragm.
That's right, which means, you know, you can stick this in the middle of a table and it will pick up people talking around it, you know, nice and easy. Or if you want to use it for podcasting or for just one-to-one recording, you can sit it in front of yourself. It comes with a stand, with a USB cable plugged straight to your computer, so you don't need any drivers or anything like that. It will just go straight to your audio software, and you don't need any preamps or any extra boxes. Just plug it straight to your computer.
The difference between this and what I use, I have to have phantom power for my microphones because they're more like a stage type of microphone or a professional recording studio microphone. So I have to have phantom power, which means I have to run, at least the way I'm doing it right now, the microphone's going to the, what is that called? The mobile pre-USB, and then that goes into the computer.
Right, and the mobile pre is supplying the phantom power.
Right. But I can also control the levels with the mobile pre. I could also have headphones hooked up to that directly as well. So in some respects, it's a little better. But for simplicity's sake, this is going to be the way to go, this Marshall MXL.006.
Yes.
It's a nice-looking microphone. I'm sure that if it even gets half the quality that I get on this microphone right here, which is exactly this is the same microphone, David. Good choice. This is an MXL, but again, this isn't you know, USB. So
the Marshall are very well regarded for. I mean, this you'll see this design quite a lot on the internet. There's an awful lot of these all come from China, and there's a factory out there that churns out exactly the same design. But the thing is, the key thing is what's inside the microphone that counts. And Marshall is always good quality gear, so you get a good sound from it.
And it has a nice little red light on it, David.
Oh, I love the red light.
So put on the red light.
You're getting high tech stuff if it has a red light.
Exactly. In fact, I might have to sell my existing mic just so I can buy this one with the red light on.
$129.99, so $130. You can get this. They'll ship it out the same day. It's up at MacSales.com. We'll put a link in the show notes directly to this microphone if you're interested. So if you've been thinking about doing a podcast, or if you've got a podcast and you're really not happy with the vocal quality of your cheap little USB headset or microphone,
Remember,
this is going to be the way to go.
There are plenty of USB microphones, mostly along the lines of like headset with a little flip down mic.
And a little plasticky piece of crap.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a little plasticky piece of crap. If you want something with some real quality, but want the simplicity of a direct USB connection, then this is the type of gear that you're going to be looking for.
Right. You got to remember, you folks, you do get what you pay for. And if you want quality sound recording ability, you're not going to pick it up for $40.
No.
You're going to have to spend over $100. And $130 for this microphone's, I know a lot of people are thinking, wow, that's a lot of money for a microphone. Actually, no, it's not.
Not compared
to what I spent. I've got three different microphones. They all cost about the same. Plus, I had to have the mobile pre to give it phantom power. So this is a much better solution for the vast majority of our listeners. So thank you very much for picking the microphone to talk about this week, David, and thanks to MacSales.com.
And don't forget for all the other great products that they have at MacSales.com.
Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. Sam, what do you got for us this week?
Wow, a lot of cool stuff. Well, I guess we should start with a really cool product. It's called the Skull Candy Audio Link Pack, and it works with an iPod. It works with mobile phones. And yes, I've even tested it with an iPhone. It's not supposed to work with an iPhone because it doesn't have, you know, whatever the authentication chip or whatever they call it. But I tried it. Now, you guys know what there's scads of backpacks out there that you can stick your PowerBook, MacBook Pro, notebook inside of. That's great. But Skull Candy has created a really cool backpack that allows the integration of speakers. It's built right in to the straps, the speakers are. Now, I've used a lot of backpacks in the past with speakers on the side, which is cool and allows you to blast your music from your iPod or any MP3 player to these speakers. The difference here is that these speakers are upright, so it's for personal listening. So you're not blasting the rest of the neighborhood.
And because I was going to say, so far, I don't think this is so cool.
No, it is.
I'm like, oh,
cool.
Great.
Now, there's several
now
other
we,
reasons.
Now we get to hear people walking by us on their backpack listening to, you know, whatever.
There are several other reasons. One, this specific model has the 30-pin connector built in.
It plugs right into the iPod.
Plugs right into the iPod. I used it immediately with the iPhone. It's got a connector for headphone. It's got a connector for other audio jacks that use, you know, normal audio jack out. But it has got the integration so that if you're on your phone, you can pick up your phone call with this. It's very well done. The connectors that you hit play, sound, fast forward, back are really well integrated. A lot of other products.
It looks like it's right here on the straps.
It is on the strap, and it's where it should be, so you can easily get to it, and it's unfettered access. I think they've done a very, very good job with the product. I haven't road tested it yet, meaning walked around trade events and played around with it, but I played around with it here in the house. I really dig it, especially if, you know, you're walking around and you want to play your own game and you don't want to use headphones. You could do that. Now, it would be great if there was a wireless connectivity. That would be the next set to incorporate. But they've done a very cool job. If you go to skullcandy.com, you'll see it. It's $129. It's called the Audio Link Pack. Now, I think they sent me one that's brand new that's not even listed on the site because this is like camel colored. And it's comfortable. The connectors are really well done. And as I said, it works on my iPhone right now. I played around with it with the music on the iTunes music as well as games. So anyway, check it out with Skull Candy. It's called Skull Candy Audio Link Pack. Go to skullcandy.com. Now with that, this is a great lead-in and segue to iPhone apps. Now, I've been playing around with lots of new iPhone apps, and I'm into games. I come from the gaming background as well. And a couple of these I want to mention. One of them is called Trism. Trism is a puzzle game. And I can't explain it, guys, unless you were to try it out. But basically, it's like Tetris gone wild. So
it's called what?
Trism. Trism.
I thought you said jism. I'm sorry.
Trism.
Oh, keep it clean.
Yeah, that's clean.
Keep it clean. Trism. T-R-I-S-M. Trism. If you go to the Apple App Store, it's probably one of the hottest games or puzzle games out. It's made by a company called DemiForce. And I met the developer. His name is Steve. I met him at the developer conference, iPhone Dev Camp, last weekend, and everyone was abuzz. They were saying, oh, that's Trism, that's Trism. Like, what the heck is that? So he sent it over to me, and I've been playing it. It's got all the features of you can use it in any mode. You can turn it upside down and still play the game, and also it's tied into the net. So if you play it and you want a challenge and you can see other people's scores, it keeps your score if you would like it to. I think it's pretty cool. It's $4.99. Just go to the App Store, type Trism, and it might even be featured on the App Store. It's a puzzle game.
In the show notes, I'll send you a link to a YouTube video of the game if the listeners want to see what it actually looks like to play. It does look like a lot of fun.
Send that over, and we'll put that in the show notes.
It's nice. And other apps I want to mention here, another really well-done app is called Blackjack 21. Just like it's spelled, it's from a company called Mobile Age. Now, Mobile Age is not new to this field. They're the guys that have been PDA developers or developers of PDA apps, entertainment, utility, and productivity apps for many years since the Newton days. These are the Landware guys. So they're the ones that created Pocket Quicken and a bunch of other really cool apps, Zagat's product that they created as well for the Palm. So they've taken their knowledge and brought it together and now created a really cool, fun game called Blackjack 21. Graphics are really well done. The gameplay is simple. Of course, it will keep track of all your scores if you opt in. And it's $4.99. It's available on the App Store today. I think they've done a very nice job with the graphics because a bunch of these blackjack games, they're okay. This is better than okay. Much better than okay. So just check it out. It's called Blackjack 21. That's from Mobile Age, or just go to mobileage.com. And then a few other ones. Lastly, Chimps Ahoy.
Great
chimps. Chimps Ahoy?
Chimps, just like chips, but it's chimps. And, of course, it's a chimp. That's their icon. It's from a company called Griptonite. And it's basically like Blackout or Breakout. Remember the old Breakout game? And you could use your fingers to control the chimps that are holding the blocks. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool because it's simple. And you have multiple levels that you play the chimps game. And it's colorful. It's got sound associated with different levels. I want it to be truly interactive with two-player, meaning wirelessly, so that I don't have to use, I could play someone else that's either next to me or someone that's around the world. That's what I would like to see, and I think that's coming with these guys. Again, it's $4.99. It's a fun game. I love the name Chimps Ahoy. I think it's just it's kind of a play on Chips Ahoy, I think. But
when I first saw the name, I thought that it was some kind of a virtual marketing thing.
Well, I think that they could tie into that, but I don't know. Hopefully the guys at
make the cookies.
Who is it? I don't know if it's a Kraft or whoever makes
Nabisco.
Nabisco. Hopefully Nabisco gets a kick out of it and pairs up with them. But I think it's well done. And then as a side note, as one of the updates, you know, we're seeing a lot of updates now. Every week, I don't know if it's a week or 10 days, Apple's putting updates into the App Store. So if you buy an app, whether it be a game or a utility on the iPhone, and it's updated, a little update symbol comes up. So what does that mean? That means you get a lot of bug fixes with some of these and new additions, new features. And one of them is A-level. Remember I told you about the level that your
It's a level, mechanics level.
This level now has audio, and I think it's pretty cool because if you're trying to reach up and you can't see the thing, now it gives you an audio tone. When you're level, it automatically gives a beep, a really cool kind of a tone. That it's got kind of a multitude of calibration symbols. You can use it in landscape or portrait mode. Anyway, that's one of the updates. PosiMotion is this company that makes it, and they've come up with a whole new line of games. One of them just shipped yesterday called Kaleidoscope. Turns your iPhone into a kaleidoscope maker. And you can use your finger to create weird, cool kaleidoscopes and then save it. And also, they just shipped Digga. You remember Boulder Dash, guys, where you were digging, you know, the little
guy? Sure, that was a fun game.
This is basically similar. I think it's almost the same or almost like a mixture between that and Load Runner. If you remember Load Runner, where you have to dig to get to the next level. And that's what this is. It brings me back to the, you know, the old Commodore days almost, the old Nintendo days. And it's shipping now as well. We're not going to do a review on it, but we could talk about it next week. And lastly, we're going to give away a bunch of these things next week. We're going to do a little PosiMotion giveaway. They said they'd give away like two or three of these different games.
Cool.
So now, unfortunately, they can't just give away a game. They have to give away a minimum of a $10 certificate.
Yeah.
So we're going to do probably three giveaways. That means each person gets a $10 certificate.
Wouldn't it be easier, though, Sam, for you just to gift someone the game? Could you do that?
No, you can't. Right now, it's not possible to gift a specific game. You can gift a $10.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So that's happening. I believe iTunes, they're gonna have to create that for, you know, a game gift. But what I think would be cool, you can't dictate if someone's going to use a gift card for this specific game, but what I told them is, look, guys, give away some of these gift cards and let the people talk about what they think is cool, and, you know, they can post it on their site. So I think that is what they should be doing. So they're going to give us a bunch of these gift cards. We're going to give them away. I'll let you dictate how it will be given away, and then hopefully those people will talk about the cool apps and games that they're using as far as from PosiMotion. So
you want to do that next week? To hold the contest next week?
Next week we'll do it.
Okay, just and then the week after we'll find out who wins.
Exactly, but from now on, if people want to check out PosiMotion, go to PosiMotion.com, look at all the different apps. They have utilities, they have games. They're pretty cool. The G-Park is really cool. It reminds you where you're parked via GPS.
That is nice. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with non-GPS iPhones. But
that's true.
You know,
that's
one of the reasons that a lot of people may be updating their iPhone soon.
Right, and they're coming out with a lot more cool stuff. We can't get into that today, but they're going to give away a bunch of these $10 gift cards, and I think that's pretty sweet. So next week we'll do it. I'll let you give those away to whoever, and hopefully those people will email and they'll feature them on the PosiMotion website.
And it's going to be a little bit longer of a show this week, Sam, because I didn't want to, before you run off, I did mention earlier on the show a joint venture that you and I are going to be launching here within the next few days, and it's called AppMinute.com. I talked about it a little bit, but let's hear from my partner in crime, Sam Levin. Talk to me a little bit about AppMinute.
It's you know, you remember the old days? Well, the old days. Remember Mac Minute? And I still
3 months ago.
I'm still have a lot of fond memories about Mac Minute. It's great, great forum and, you know, a newsworthy site that just featured what was going on with Mac products in general. And it gave updates. And sometimes there were some comments, and they weren't full-blown reviews. We leave that up to the people like iLounge and other people that want to do, you know, 10-page reviews. That's fine.
Or My Mac.
And My Mac, of course. And that's fine. If you have the time, you go through it. But if you're on an iPhone and you want to see the latest and what's cool about this app, that's what App Minute is going to be focused on. You know, people, we're going to have some editors, of course, that we know and love and trust, feature what they think is cool, what they like about it. And it's going to be tailored. So if you're on an iPhone, you could view this easily on the iPhone. Of course, if you're on a normal browser, you can as well. But and I think it'll be a lot of fun. We'll get a lot of companies involved. Anyone that wants to send their PR. This is not just focused around app. It is App Minute, but anything regarding iPod, iPhone, peripherals that connect to the iPod or iPhone.
The nice thing about it is going to be that, say, we're talking, a company sends us a PR email saying, hey, we just released this new application up on the App Store for the iPhone, and we'll post that, but we'll also have a link directly to the app, to the App Store itself, so directly from the App Minute page, you'll be able to click something.
Yep.
It will launch your App Minute application, or app application, and you could download it right then.
Right,
it'll be
a direct
awesome.
Link. Exactly. You know, I think that it's just smart and it's simple, and you don't have to spend a lot of time to learn about some new stuff or updates that we receive about a specific app. I just think it was time for something like this, and it's going to get bigger and bigger, and I think it serves the community well, and hopefully vendors will appreciate it and get involved and participate. So, yeah, it's called App Minute. Our Twitter is App Minute. We're not active. You know, if you go, there's, you know, four followers.
Nothing going on yet, but we haven't launched yet either.
No,
so,
it's
to
just
be fair.
We're just talking about it, and I think it would be a lot of fun. I'd love your feedback, and of course, news at appminute.com. That is one way to send in your news and PR newsworthy information about iPhone apps. And what else do we have? PR at App Minute. That's another, or At Minute PR. That's
and
another.
News at appminute.com.
Yeah, news at appminute is the best right now. And
so
we'll get into it later.
Yeah, right now, if you go up to the mymac.com website, I don't know if you saw that, Sam. Have you gone to the MyMac website since last night?
No.
Go up there right now.
I'm on it. Hold on.
MyMac.com.
I'm on it. Got it.
So we got a little bit of a free PR. Thanks to the fine folks at MyMac.
I know those guys.
I know those guys.
Yeah, and that's
it's going to be fun. Obviously, as time goes on, that site's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's not going to detract from what I'm doing at MyMac Magazine. That's my first love. I've been doing it since 1995. In internet years, that means I've been doing it for about, 34 years.
At least.
And
if you guys have other ideas, to our listeners of what you find interesting, what you would really like, just send it in. You know, just say, hey, this is what we like. Send it in via Twitter. You know, you can send it on the App Minute Twitter or Sam Levin. I'm on Twitter 24 hours a day almost. I mean, it's just crazy. And we just want to make this fun, lively, and informative.
That's
what
right.
Our deal is on App Minute. And that's it.
Yep, and it's not going to be run by someone coming into the industry that really doesn't know what they're doing. We're veterans, Sam. We think we know what people want. We've been doing this for a long time, so we're going to bring that expertise to a brand new site, to a brand new platform, and hopefully, on a personal level, I hope it's very successful and we get stinking rich.
Yeah.
But
our key to start with, it wasn't about the money. It was about just servicing a need. I mean, there's a need for this to talk about cool things. And look, other companies are going to do similar things. I saw at iPhone Dev Camp the guy that's doing apps about iLounge, embedded in iLounge, and that's great. They do really exhaustive features on that. So does my Mac, but I don't want to spend sometimes 20, 30, 40 minutes on that. I want to one screen or two screens on an iPhone, get my information, cool, this is cool, I like it, click on the link, I can get it right there or find out more information. That's it.
Thank you very much, Sam Levin. We appreciate that.
Thanks, guys.
Anything going on with Guy Searle that we should be aware of?
No, I'm just working on a couple of minor projects. I'm trying to redo Mac Hippie because I'm finding Sandvox to be a little restrictive.
Yeah. David Levin.
David Levin.
David Cohen.
Actually, by the way, my father's name was David. So.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe you guys are related.
Name. Great name. Great name.
Probably not. No, I'm just I'm going to be concentrating this week on getting on top of some of my reviews. So I'm a little bit behind, and John Nemirovsky, our well organized reviews editor, has been reminding me that I need to get on with a few things. So I'll be concentrating on that this week.
I'm trying to find one of our listeners sent us an email. Let's see, from Michael Breed. He sent the email that says, "Hi, Tim, I found something that I'm not sure you folks are aware of yet. At least I wasn't. The annoying, long, tedious backups that seem to take place every time you sync your iPhone or iPod Touch can be halted without stopping the entire syncing process. I'm not sure if this is new in 7.7.1. It's not. It was already there. Updated last week, but it's working for me. When a long backup is occurring, you can simply hit the X in the message box at the top of the screen in iTunes. The backup halts and the sync completes itself normally." I think that's a nice tip to know for those who didn't know.
Yeah. I've been doing it for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, why do you need to back up your iPhone every single time you plug it in? It's ridiculous. I understand if you've installed something on the iPhone from the App Store, you've either updated an app, bought a new app, whatever, then I can, or music from your iTunes. I can understand that, but if you haven't done anything but listen to music or play a couple games, then you plug it back into your computer, it doesn't need to back up every single time. So
that's a good tip to know. Since I went to 2.0.1, though, that does seem to have improved. It's a lot quicker now than it was before.
Well, there's also two other workarounds. I'm not going to get into it, but you can go into terminal mode, and you can disable it in terminal mode. So there is a workaround. So it's permanent if you want that, but I don't recommend that.
Up at the MyMac website right now, going backwards in time, Gil Polson did a review of eWallet for the iPhone. John Nemirovsky has a couple different reviews. He's got the i2i Stream and the Max Power 802.11 NGMB Wireless PCM CIA Laptop Card Bus Adapter. You couldn't get a longer name if you tried.
Well, you could, but you could, I wouldn't recommend it.
Neither would I. He also has, I thought this was really, really fun to edit and post, Nemo's 10-point tutorial number 10, Nature and Art in San Francisco. There's some, tutorial on how to make photos look a little better and that sort of thing. But the photos that he supplies in the article are just fantastic pictures. And what's kind of neat is I get to pick the picture that I want on the main page. And I just love the one that he supplied. Please do not lean against the sneeze guard. I love that. That's just, I don't know. I want a t-shirt that says that. Mm. Donnie Yankolo has an animation-ish review. It's
that looks really interesting.
I kind of like the user interface to that. It's very clean, but yet it's kind of funky at the same time.
Yeah, you can't buy it from Amazon, though, which is kind of too bad.
Well, yeah. Donnie Yankolo also did two other reviews, Motion X Poker for the iPhone, and it kind of goes back to what Sam was saying, that MyMac.com, in fact, is going to be covering a lot of iPhone applications. And he also did the Ice Cam 2 review, because as we were talking real earlier in the show with Bill, you can't buy an EyeSight camera anymore for your Macintosh, which is completely retarded.
Now,
anybody that has a Mac Pro and a Cinema Display, you don't get an iSight. It's crazy.
Right, or a Mac Apple Mini.
Or a Mac Mini, absolutely. I still don't understand why Apple doesn't have a Cinema Display with that built in. And if they don't, which they don't, why you can't buy an iSight video camera from Apple. I don't understand it.
They had to discontinue them because they weren't able to sell them in the European Union.
Well, so what? That means nobody can buy them?
Why did they discontinue? Why?
Because there were some new laws regarding cameras that were issued in the European Union, and the iSight wasn't compliant, and they obviously didn't want to spend the money on making it compliant, so they discontinued it. So it's actually Europe's fault, so sorry about that.
Oh, well, you're bloody wankers. Anyway, I'm excited because I have three of them.
I've got one. I've got one that I've had since, and it's the first generation iSight. I don't think they ever really changed.
Nope.
I'm not using it, and I've had people offer me money for it because a lot of people want this.
They're expensive.
But I like having it. I'm not getting rid of it.
No, it's great, and it does work with Macs that go all the way back, God, from like 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe. It'll work, I think, starting with, I think it was 10.2.
Well, you got to have a USB 2.0 connect. No, I don't think you even have to have 2.0. I think it works with 1.0. In fact, I know it does because I used to use this on my G4 dual processor 500.
The iSight's FireWire.
FireWire, not USB. Yes.
No, that's right. You're right.
FireWire. But it's pretty cool. I've used a lot of different webcams, and it's just seamless. You plug it in, and it works. USB 2.0, there's other stuff. I don't know.
Latency problems.
I've
always liked it, and the ones that they have built into the current generation of iMacs work just as well. They're really nice, but I still like having the external camera just in case.
Yep, I know.
So, anybody got anything else before we wrap up the show and I get to go watch the rest of the Lions game?
The Lions playing tonight?
Yeah. it's 7-0 Lions, but the Giants are on the move.
Are the Dolphins playing? No.
Do the Dolphins even play football anymore?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they've gone to the Girls League, so,
The Girls League.
They haven't looked good in the last couple of years, ever since Ricky Waters left.
No, well.
But we just lost half of our audience right there, I should say.
Yeah, good riddance to Ricky, as far as I'm concerned. Any man who'd rather smoke dope than make millions of dollars has other problems.
Yeah, he's definitely got his priorities wrong. Geez, I would rather do pretty much anything than smoke dope because
it's stupid.
Not that I've ever tried it in my youth.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah,
you didn't inhale. Yeah.
No, I inhaled. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And
I can honestly
talk to my kids about it.
Not one of the 750 times that I did it did I really enjoy it.
Mine was always peer pressure, and I never enjoyed it. And by the time I decided I don't care what my friends are doing, I don't like doing this, I'm not going to do it, I felt like a better person afterwards. Now, I wish that I would have taken the same stance with cigarettes and caffeine, but unfortunately I didn't. So, anyways, that's our show this week. We will be back next week. We'll have a contest with Sam Levin. We'll probably have another guest on the show or another co-host. It might be maybe Bill again. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out what's going on with Lee Givens. We haven't talked to him in over a month now.
Yeah,
maybe we need to send him an email.
Hey, Tim, maybe we'll get Posimush and CEO to come on and talk about stuff that he's doing, you know?
Sure.
You know? I mean, he's giving away a bunch of his stuff, so.
Sure. Tell him $1,000 per show for ad. No problem. have him right on and, no, just kidding.
Oh.
Are we looking for stuff for the 200th podcast?
Yeah, we've got 5 more episodes to go for the 200th podcast. Because of personal issues, Guy, you know why I haven't really planned this out.
Yeah.
And I still really don't have any plans. It's really hard for me to make plans right now because things could change very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But it is a significant number for us. Whether you do fly here and we do a show live together or it's just a regular show and we kind of look back at the history of this podcast. We've been doing this since 2004.
Right.
We've gone through, a lot of people have been on the show on and off. I mean, it used to be when the show first started, it was just me.
Right.
And that was dreadful.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah. And then it was Chad Perry and me for a long time, just the two of us.
Right. And then Chris started doing Nutmeg News.
Yep. And that was actually my idea. I wanted Chris on the show. He just didn't know what he could contribute, and I came up with the idea of Nutmeg News.
Right.
And then you came in with...
Dashboard Minute.
Dashboard Minute. And then David had Fenestration. John Nemo had his segment. We got so many segments that we actually broke off to a separate podcast, the My Mac Mini podcast.
Right.
I think we did that for like 20 episodes.
Yeah, it was less than 20,
but it was, yeah, it was right around there.
Yeah, it was, you know, a good half a year that we did that.
Yeah.
And then we rolled that back into the main show. Geist joined us shortly after our 100th podcast, simply because we did a podcast from his... hotel room in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
My ever so luxurious hotel room in Grand Rapids.
That show is actually still online. In fact, every single one of the podcasts that we've ever done, you're not going to find them all in our iStore listings or iTunes listing.
Right.
Because I just didn't want hundreds and hundreds of podcasts listed there. I think that's a little intimidating for somebody to subscribe to and they see all these podcasts sitting there. But if you go up to My Mac Magazine or MyMac.com, in our info bar, whatever you want to call it, our menu bar, it says podcast. If you click that, every single podcast is listed right there, including Guy Searle's live podcast from his bedroom or from his hotel room. And that was a fun show, though. I mean,
we sat there for like over an hour and a half, just shooting the breeze, and it was a lot more intimate, just because the three of us were there together, as compared to like what we're doing here.
Right.
And there was a lot of interaction that just isn't possible unless you have people actually there together.
And we've had, you know, a lot of different people on our show, not as co-hosts, but as
guests.
We've had, you know, I think the first guest we ever had, who would that have been? I think it was right before Tiger came out, so that would have been Bob Levitas. He was the first one.
Yeah, and he's been on a couple times.
We had Dr. Gilamelio.
Right, Gilamelio.
Ex-CEO of Apple Computer. That was My Mac Podcast number 70, which was February of 2006.
He was a great guest.
He was a really good guest. We met somebody that I'm still close to this day because of the podcast, Rick Stringer. He's been on the show a few times. And Guy, you've met Rick. So have you, David.
Yeah. He was at the 100th podcast.
And he was also at Macworld Expo this year.
Yeah, that's where David met him.
Right. Yep.
We've just had so many different people. John Martellaro, Daphne Calfron, remember her?
Sure.
I love my Mac. I mean, Bruce G., Bill Palmer. Bill Palmer was actually on our show before he started his own podcast.
Right.
And he's doing real well with the iProm magazine now. So we've got a really rich history, and I'm not even going to get into how many thousands and thousands of dollars of contests that we've done over the years with, you know, Microsoft and Adobe, I mean, the big names out there, as well as some of the smaller companies, but yet making fantastic products.
Right. Well, like you said, Bruce G. from G3.
Yeah, we gave away some of his stuff, and that's fantastic software there, too. Guy Kawasaki has been on the show. Andy Anako has been on the show. I mean, we've had fantastic guests.
Dwayne McDuffie.
Now, most people listening probably aren't going to remember that or remember who he is, but... He's a comic book creator, and he's a huge Mac user. So, you know, that was fantastic, too. So the show keeps changing. It keeps evolving. When I started this, I had no idea that we would eventually start talking about a telephone and applications on the telephone. Who would have thought that would have happened? But yet, here we are. We're doing that now. You know, now Sam Levin's on the show regularly. And a year ago, I wouldn't have predicted that. Would you have, Sam?
No, it feels great, and it's just it's really nice.
I remember listening to Sam on Inside Mac Radio.
Yep,
sure.
And that was a radio show, but I used to download it as a podcast. And when I would make my monthly sojourns down to Indianapolis area to buy my cigarettes, a lot cheaper than here in Michigan, you know, I would listen to Sam Levin on Inside Mac Radio, and I used to love that segment. I hated how they called you Sammy, though. I know I've told you that a number of times, but I hated that.
The bottom line is it's the content, and we're going to keep doing that. I mean, we've got great, you know, hosts on the show, and David, Guy, and it's nice. Nice group of people that deliver fresh information, and you know, it's a pleasant place to be if you're into Mac. Actually, it's not just Mac anymore. It's anything that can connect to a Mac or
absolutely
or iPhone. So it's really
we've always been a podcast that's more than just Mac. We right. just don't advertise it as such, and maybe we should. But because of our charter at mymac.com, that's kind of the, right. always going to be the focus. And I don't mind when we get off topic, although, you know, talking about marijuana use probably way off topic. But you got to be honest, though. Going way back in the show, I've gone off topic in the past. I mean, I've literally had death threats because of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that, Sam?
Let's not go into that.
No,
remind next time you call me on the telephone, which will probably be in a couple hours.
When it's not being recorded,
recorded.
Must be PC people or something.
No.
Let's not even talk about it.
We'll talk about it. So listen. The bottom line is, it's great, and I'm gonna videotape sparklers and a cake on the 200th, and that's what I'm gonna do. Sparklers and a cake, and I'm gonna join in that way.
Well, here's my challenge to you guys. My co-host here, as well as anybody listening. If there's somebody, a guest out there that we can reasonably get, I don't think, you know, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, or Barack Obama, or John McCain are going to come on the show.
Oh, Hillary, but if it's someone Hillary that might.
Hillary might, yeah.
What's definitely. She doing these days?
Trying to get her name back into the race for president. she is.
Good God.
If there's somebody out there that you think that would be really cool to get on the show, let us know. Some people probably won't be, you know, I don't want to go back and get, you know, some of the old co-hosts and stuff like that. We've already done that show, the reunion show.
Right.
I want to kind of look ahead, something new and different for the 200th show. I mean, you know, we can go back and look at the history as well. That might be fun. And I think for the 200th show, we're not going to do a new show. We're not going to talk about the latest and happenings in Apple unless, you know,
unless there's something
huge
really,
happens.
And they're talking about something in September. But
we'll talk about it then when it happens. But it's going to be I like to make it a long show, maybe 2 hours, and really have a fun guest on. And
I've got a really cool guest I'm going to ping for us. And he deals with the interactive media space in Beverly Hills.
Huh, that would be cool.
It's very cool.
You know, somebody, obviously I would like to try to get celebrities on the show. I've thought about that in the past. But here's my issue with having celebrities on the show. Not necessarily actors, but, you know, like musicians. We're used to talking to people like developers and CEOs of companies and stuff. And that's a very high-level conversation. You don't always get that with the rock stars.
I play my guitar.
So to me, those are kind of boring interviews. I know that they'd probably get us a lot more PR. Oh, well, look, so-and-so's on this podcast. You definitely got to go listen to it. Well, that's a boring show to me. I don't really care where this guy came up with, you know, the name of the song or, you know, where he was sitting on the toilet when he played this guitar riff and that turned into Stairway to Heaven. I don't really care about that. And I don't think most of our listeners will either because this is a tech show. So
if it's Stairway to Heaven.
Well, yeah.
On a toilet.
But, you know, if it's a celebrity that's into Max, like Sinbad, that would be
there's another name right there.
Yeah, we've had Sinbad on the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's Mac geek, big time.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, though, Guy, that was probably the worst sounding podcast segment we've ever had.
Yeah.
Because it was a little piece of paper stuck in the microphone jack. And so it was kind of scratchy, and I almost didn't use it, but it was like, this is Sinbad.
Yeah,
we've got to have Sinbad. So, you know, if there's somebody out there that you think that would make a really cool guest for our 200th episode, hey, let us know. You know, we'll try to get that person. I've been trying to get Steve Wozniak on the show, but the guy is just so busy.
Yeah.
And my name's not Leo Laporte, so it's not as easy to get him as it would otherwise be. If, you know, I was
We'll keep trying,
because I think he would be fun to have on the show.
Yeah,
I'd love to have him as a regular co-host. That would be awesome.
He's a nice guy.
He is. Hell of a nice guy. So, anyways, that's the show 195 this week. We will be back next week with show 196. And send us your feedback. We'd really love to hear from our listeners. It's tim@mymac.com. Of course, I can share your comments with the rest of the staff. Nobody ever calls our phone number on the podcast anymore. Occasionally, Robert Hazelrig will, but most of those aren't for everybody to listen to. It's more or less directed to me, so I don't usually play those on the show. Sam, we got some videos that we're going to be posting up at mymac.com from the App Developer Conference that you were at.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to watching those. And I guess we're out of here, guys.
Thanks.
Yep, think so.
Bye.
And peace.
Thanks for downloading the mymac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at mymac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.